You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to the Syntax Spooky Stories Part 2.
Oh, that's so much better than mine.
I don't know if it is, but I went for it. You know what? It's funny, Wes. We've been we got some Bluey books for the kids. You know, kids love Bluey.
Oh, I love Bluey.
I've been trying to read all of the Bluey books in an Australian accent just because, you know, it's more fun for the kids if you try to sound like I'm trying to do all the voices of all the characters. I've gotten pretty good at it. But there was a book last night I was reading to my daughter that Jean-Luc was in, and he's like French, so I was like trying to go back and forth between French and Australian, and it was a total nightmare. That was like a spooky story. My wife was just sitting there like, oh my god, what are you doing?
Oh, that's great.
Love it though. Kids absolutely love it. They're like, that's the voice.
Gotta get all the Australian slang up and running too. I follow a bunch of Australians on TikTok, and their slang is just next level, man.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I think the majority of podcasts I listen to these days are all Australian, which is totally bizarre. I listen to 2 Australian comedy podcasts and then like a couple of Australian movie podcasts. So Aussies out there, I'm in the zone right now with all of you. I know all of the different cities. I know all of, you know, the Gold Coast and all that stuff. They're all talking about where they're doing their comedy shows. All right. Enough Australian talk. Let's get into the spooky stories. But first, let's introduce 3 of our amazing sponsors today, which is Linode, the perfect place to host your stuff, whatever it may be. You get access to all kinds of hosting services from Linode at great prices. Also, LogRocket, which gives you scrubbable video replay to really understand how your users are using your stuff. And then Auth0, the effortless solution to add authentication and authorization to your website. So let's get going. Let's get ready to rumble with some spooky stories here. First one is, hi, not that scary of a story. Well, you're kind of low selling us here on the start. Not that scary of a story, but I was building an admin panel for my company's product. It was on staging and supposed to be internal, at least for the time being. I used Lorem Ipsum as a text generator for placeholder text. Sounds familiar, like we all do. But being an internal tool, I used Slipsum, which generates sentences used by Samuel L. Jackson in his movies. All profanity. Yeah, I can imagine there's a lot of mother effers in there. Couple of days later, I get a call from my manager saying some senior managers from a big U.S. corporate went inside the admin panel, and I need to change that text. Thanks. This is great. We just had one of these on the last Spooky Stories episode, but I don't know how many times we've read stories on the Spooky Stories episodes that involved a Lorem Ipsum text generator that's not Lorem Ipsum. That is something, you know, like I think even hipster Ipsum is fine, but if you're getting into anything with profanity, like I get it. I revealed that I at one time used the Wu-Tang Ipsum generator and also bit me in the ass, but like, come on. Yeah, you gotta use just Lorem Ipsum or something nice.
Yeah, just don't do it. Next one, don't do it. Just a short one. I once blew up a $300 million website because I forgot to adequately do load testing. We tried enabling Brotli, which is...
It's a compression engine.
Brotli, yeah. It's kind of like Gzip where you turn it on your server and it will compress it and send it to the browser, and the browser knows how to unpack that. For dynamic content, and I assumed it was just like Gzip, performance, set and forget. So in dev and staging, we just hit it a couple times and it looked decent. In production, response times went from 300 milliseconds to 10 seconds as scaling exploded. Luckily, so that's kind of a scary thing. So scaling exploded. So probably in some sort of auto scale up environment, whether it's serverless or you have
container
load balancing installed. So that can get expensive very quickly. Luckily, we had solid rollback procedure. So good. That could have been much, much worse. $300 million website. What does that mean? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big website. It's bringing in the bacon, as they say. So I'll give that, you know, 5, five bacon with scary googly eyes on it. Is that a thing? Is that a spooky thing? Five uncooked bacon swimming with salmonella or something. That's spooky. Next one here is, a couple of decades ago, I messed up a loop that sent the same email to the same customer hundreds of times in rapid succession. Stay spooky. Yes, same email to the same customer. Just a big F you to that one user, particularly you. That's great.
It's good. Next one from Dev Oops. I work at a small small startup where we run a Magneto store, and every Friday we
Magneto
do special.
Magneto store?
Yeah. Magneto's still around. It's probably very popular, isn't it?
Magneto is still around.
Oh, Magento. Why I call it Magneto?
Magneto
I'm so dyslexic. Yeah.
Magneto is the villain from the X-Men. He's the magnet guy.
Oh, Magneto is like the magnet part that makes spark in a small engine.
Oh, that's interesting.
Anyways, that's not what Magneto is. It's Magento. Every Friday, we would do special deals on some products. One Friday, one of our team members accidentally deleted all the deals from the admin panel by clicking select all instead of select visible. No big deal. We have a daily backups, I said. The CEO proceeded to let our DevOps team know so they can restore the backups of all the single affected database table from early morning. Fast forward a few minutes, the team member who went to the orders page and saw that the last order was around 5 a.m. Oh, no. I thought, and then I went to check the database, and the DevOps team had restored the backup of the whole database and not just the single table we requested. We are 6 hours back in time, and all actions and orders that were created and shipped in that period were gone. They shipped them. We spent the rest of the day recreating orders from email logs that we had. We later realized that it was improper communication, but nonetheless, it will remain in my mind as a big DevOps movement.
At least you had that trail of emails, because that logs. Was thinking, like, how could you possibly recover that? You're looking for, you know, the merchant payments. You're looking for those types of things, but
like, what if you roll back a database? My first thing would be like, let's just take a copy of this one just in case. But DevOps,
that is the process. That's the standard process. In fact, I remember like remember back in, you know, PHP days, you have your WordPress site that's on localhost or your Drupal site, and you have to do like a push up to the, you make a copy of the database and push it up. Like literally step one of our checklist is make a copy of the current database. That's step one every single time.
But like, honestly, it might've been like a 8 gig database, you know? So yeah. That's
Magento
maybe not
hot,
so easy.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yikes.
Woof. I will give that one 6 Black Widow spiders out of 10.
I'm running out of spooky things to think about.
I don't know if I am running out of. I could keep thinking. We actually had real Black Widows at our house, and that. No, thank you.
Really? Oh, I don't even. Do we have Black Widows in Canada?
Yeah, they don't. I don't know. They exist in Michigan. So I don't know like how much further north they stop existing. But we had here's a spooky non-code related story. We had a small infestation of Black Widows at our last house. They were underneath our patio furniture, and I tipped the patio furniture over and found like tons of them. And they are very scary. They're very scary.
And they're very poisonous, right?
Yeah, it'll mess you up. It's like a neurological thing, so it gives you like extreme muscle cramping. There hasn't been like a death from a Black Widow bite because they don't really like to bite. There hasn't been one since like the 80s or something. But they can kill your dog and they can kill your 2-year-old. So I was very, very adamant about getting rid of them. And so I had to become like a Black Widow spider hunter, and I could identify their webs just by like looking at it. And I would have flashlights and then I had like little tinctures of eucalyptus oil that I was sprinkling all over everywhere to try to get them to GTFO off of our property.
Oh, I thought you were putting some CBD on the spiders.
Yeah, I was just, you know, yeah, puffing some smoke under there, trying to get them lit up and
getting them loaded. Yeah.
They're, whoa, where we at, man? This is my web.
My dog this morning. Oh, I got another story. Let's This is the thing about animal stories is you tell one animal story. Say, oh, you had a raccoon once. Everybody's got a story. So I found what I thought was a mole, but now I think it is a shrew.
Could it be a mole?
I thought it was a vole at first, but voles are like, it didn't look like it. Anyway, so we got these new windows installed at our house, and they have these window wells. And one thing that happens, unfortunately, with window wells is animals fall in them. And my dog jumped in the window well this morning and bit it. And like, he never catches anything, so I wasn't worried about it. He jumps right in there, picks it up. This thing starts screaming, so I give him a smack. I'm like, put that thing down. Oh, so I got it out. And it's just a tiny little shrew or mole or something. And somebody told me you should have killed that because they can get into your house or into like the insulation. But I let him go back into the forest.
Yeah, we had like a major vole problem, and they were like causing all these tracks in our lawn. And we could this was at our old house in Michigan, and we could not get rid of them. It was like the worst process to try to get rid of those bad boys. All right, next story here today. By the way, Dev Oops, that's very funny. That seems like a great Twitter account, by the way, or like an Instagram account. That's a good title. All right, next one here is one of our department's clients admitted that the last straw for ditching their developers and switching to us was that they found out the developer named their AI model Skynet. I guess they didn't have a sense of humor as the developer. I feel like we would have gotten along. Yeah, can you imagine? Like, man, that'd be a rough way to get let go. It's just like, oh, you named your thing this scary thing from a scary, action movie. You're gone. You're toast. You're out of here. That sounds rough. I would hate that. But I guess if it's the last straw, it seems like they probably had other things going on before that.
The next story has a blog post associated with it. I'm not going to go through the entire blog post, but it looks like it was referred to the 2003 blackout. Were you affected by that? Because you lived in Michigan at the time. No? Oh, man. I remember.
I don't remember anything about this.
Oh, you would remember that. The 2003 blackout was massive. Like 10 million people in southern Ontario and 45 million people in 8 of the U.S. states.
Hmm.
Like the maybe power I was out. Yeah. I'm just looking. No, Michigan. Yeah, all of Michigan was down, so. You probably were.
I was probably bummed out that my band's equipment couldn't turn on or something. Yeah. That's what I would have been doing at that time.
Anyways, so this is related to that blackout. He linked us to a blog post so we can obviously talk about it. DavidTruxall.com. You can go to the URL there. But he says, my code once sent 56,000 errant emails causing an email outage for an entire company. Details here.
56,000 emails.
Oh, taking out the entire email system. Rough, rough, rough.
Yeah. I give this one 56,000 ghoulies out of 56,000. That one stinks. That's rough. All right, next is, this is my story from my first job. To set the scene, I was a brand new developer who had spent 2 months learning C# and JavaScript before being thrown into a team as a contracting senior developer. The company I was contracting for had a web app that after years of mismanagement had evolved into a big ball of mud. Yeah, we all been there. It was full of quirks that came from the dictatorial rule of management. The boss had one day seen a lot of errors in the network tab, and because he didn't like seeing that much red, he demanded that all of the network requests return a 200. Congratulations, you have yourself a GraphQL server. With the failing ones containing an error object. Yep, that's literally a GraphQL server.
That's how GraphQL works.
Now, this company had gotten started years ago with a framework that was almost deprecated when they had started using it, EXTJS. I've not used that.
I remember that one. That was very big in what was the mobile framework that was like it looked felt native?
jQuery UI?
No, it was kind of like that, but EXT, I need to find it out now. Sentia Touch. Sentia, that was it. I think Sentia Touch uses EXTJS, yeah.
Interesting.
Anyways, go ahead.
It was from the bad old days before React and was heavily configuration-based. The code had gone through a lot of breaking versions and had the scars to show it. If anything broke during the dev, the entire application would just show a blank screen and no console errors would show. I'm sure the boss had something to do with this one, too. Unlike React, ext.js had two-way data binding, and as a new developer, I was tasked with writing what should have been a simple enough form. The binding was a little strange in the fact that if you mistyped a variable you were referencing in the binding, it would fail. The whole app would break, etc. What was more confusing was that the breaking seemed to go one way. I would try to write the code in the binding, it would break the app. I commented out the code I added, the app would stay broken. Ah, that's interesting. I ended up having to reset all of my work with version control, and that was the only way to fix things. Now, a fresh-faced newbie, I had no idea what was going on. Was the app storing some sort of internal state that was keeping broken? Was it the breaking cached? I had no idea, and it took me over a day to realize what was going on. It turns out ext.js implemented its own parser to take what you write in the binding code and extract the variables it finds. Funnily enough, it just doesn't handle comments and ignores the fact that some variables are commented out. Can't find variable, app breaks. Huh. Okay.
Wow.
This behavior was totally undocumented, and I had to find in on the Wayback Machine, just like a lot of other documentation ext.js needed each day. So this person had to use the Wayback Machine to find documentation.
It's kind of a bummer thing about working on older stuff is that all the docs are gone and you can't search anything because you can't. How do you?
And if the docs weren't versioned correctly, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, that stinks. That job taught me a lot about debugging and working in a legacy code, but I'm not keen to go back to it anytime soon. Hope you enjoyed this as much as it caused me pain at the time. Love the pod. Yeah. That hits in a very real spot for me where, like, you're using some old thing, it's broken, it's undocumented, and sure, you learn something out of it, but let's just be glad you're no longer there anymore. Let's take a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors today, which I'm going to say not spooky, not a spooky sponsor, just to save you some not spooky time here. I'm talking about Linode, Linode being a great place to host your stuff.
Yeah, Linode, cloud computing developers trust. They provide simple and accessible Linux cloud solutions and services. What does that mean? Well, you got to host something. You need to run some compute. You need to put your database somewhere. They provide solutions for all of that kind of stuff. If you're the developer, you probably want to host a Node.js application, spin up a Linux server. You can do that with Linode. You're going to check it out at linode.com/syntax. They're going to give you $100 in free credit to try it on out. That's pretty sweet. So check it out, linode.com/syntax. Thank you, Linode, for sponsoring. Next one, I got a horror story for you, kind of secondhand, but still my fault. My dev and I were testing a lead gen form for a global technology company, and we were testing the reCAPTCHA v3 to see if our filters were working. We have a test distro list and a prod distro list that is selected on the environment. I asked my dev to test our filters to get the highest reCAPTCHA v3 score. And in my request, I mentioned something like, you will probably get a pretty high score if you had something like f@u.com in the email field. Sure enough.
If you keep in mind, that's the full word there. Yeah.
Sure enough, I see an email from a website form with f@u.com in the email field. Our company name in the company field, and it was sent to everybody on the project over the entire world. Oof. As added insult, the message says, I hope this doesn't go to the client. Thanks.
Oh my
P.S.
God.
Love seeing the pics of your studio build. Don't do that. Always, even always use example.com. Example.com is literally set up for exactly that. You shouldn't even be spamming what you think are fake email addresses because A, it might be a real email address, and B, if you're running it through an actual email thing on purpose or by accident, you hurt your email sending score by sending to places that get bounced. So don't do that. Example.com is set up exactly for that. It's literally, and it's not some company set it up. Like example.com is from ICANN. Yeah. Owner, Internet Assigned Numbers Authority. Yeah. IANA or ICANN.
Interesting. I didn't know that. You learn something new every day.
Yeah, there you go.
Sick. All right, next is Scarlet Letter. This is a tale that gets told at my current work about an old employee's open source contribution, which went unexpectedly frightening. This dev decided to make an issue on a popular Golang logging package. The issue was to ask the owner of the package to change their username from starting with an uppercase character to being all lowercase. The reason being, imports in Golang are done with URLs in the Git repo, and the convention in Golang apparently is to use all lowercase for package names. After some discussion, the maintainers agreed that the repo owner changed his name on GitHub to have all lowercase letters. Little did they know that Golang imports are case sensitive, and this change means lots of services went down and lots of builds failed. And by a lot, I mean a lot. As one of the bigger services taken down by this change was Docker. Taken down Docker, yeah. That's a, you must be Godzilla taking down Docker. Needless to say, the maintainers added this to a list of lessons to be learned, and I hope the dev has always thought twice before making similar issues. Here is a link to the initial issue and the follow-up. Oh, that's great. They even provided, they provided receipts. Gotta love that. Just more shame to the fire there.
That's unreal. And it just goes to show the fragility of like every package management system out there, that like simply changing one thing. And usually like stuff like GitHub, they provide redirects and there's a lot of complexity there, but wow.
Yeah.
Taking down Docker. Good job.
I'll give that 5 zombies out of 10.
Next one we have here, it says, I always love these episodes. Y'all read one of mine last time, but I have had a much worse one in the intervening months. So shout out to everybody who continues to create content for us. Your bad days provide hilarious laughs for the rest of us. If you decide to share the story, you have permission to say it was sent by Adam. All right, I guess we'll say his name. His Twitter handle is CoasterAD on Twitter. You'll follow him for more hilarious antics.
For about a year, we were getting rare sporadic reports from people who would suddenly be missing some of their achievements. Each time we got a report, I'd comb through the code for possible explanations and a few more tests and inevitable fail to find the cause. I was never quite sure why it was happening. I finally logged into the MongoDB database to look at the collection storing achievement progress. Probably should have done that way before this. Yeah. But since only some achievements were missing, I didn't think I'd learn anything there. I was expecting to see millions of records. We have over 1 million users and a lot of achievements per user, but I only saw 1,000. Can you just imagine that feeling, Wes? You have 1 million users.
Oh.
You look in your achievements and you see 1,000. The feeling to me, yeah, they describe it very well in the next sentence. My soul flew out of my body. that's exactly how I would feel. I could just imagine the cold sweat coming about, just like that sheer terror feeling.
Yeah.
Oh, no thanks. There's normally no reason to delete achievement progress, so the only time that these records were getting deleted was when a user deleted their account. The problem had to be there. I looked at the code and saw what I expected to see. Perk progress dot delete mini with a user ID. Okay. I even looked at the code every time we got one of these reports and thought, well, that can't be it. Even if the user ID is undefined, then it should be fine since no records would match user ID is equal to undefined. But this was the only place in the entire code base where achievement records were being deleted. So this time I thought I must have misunderstood something about Mongoose queries. After digging in the docs, I figured out Mongoose's default behavior was to simply delete keys in queries that don't match the schema. Since my schema specifies that the user ID field is required and there is a string, then if Mongoose got that user ID was undefined, it would convert it to empty brackets. As in, instead of running nothing, the query would return everything. Delete mini everything, yes. The end result is that every time a user deleted their account, it would purge every single achievement for every single user. every single user, y'all. The fix prevented future deletions. The fix preventing future deletions was easy, but alas, the data was gone forever. I had plenty of data snapshots, but since the data was being purged over and over again, there was no snapshot that contained enough data worth trying to recover. The only saving grace is that most achievements are stored in game save data, so those can auto recover. In fact, that's why it was so hard to realize this problem was even happening. Even though the records were being completely purged, most records would automatically recreate themselves when players played. So it seems like they were storing this in like local storage, like they say. And so the user,
the achievements were deleted, but the achievements would regenerate themselves, thankfully.
Gotcha. Whoa, that is the big saving grace here. Can you imagine? But deleting many, yeah, that's 10 Draculas out of 10 for me. 10 brutal. Count Draculas.
Definitely, yeah. 10 out of 10 for that one. That's a great one.
That's a great one. Anytime you get, I deleted everything instead of one thing, that is, that is definitely soul leaving your body territory. One way to prevent soul leaving your body issues is to use a service for your authentication, because let's face it, authentication is hard. And that's an area that many people screw up. And so if you use a service like Auth0, you very well may prevent yourself some of those spooky moments in your code. Because, again, Auth is hard. We don't want to have to end up, writing something that breaks our entire authentication and authorization system. So why not let the pros handle it? So with Auth0, you get to do all sorts of great things like easily log in with your favorite social provider, Twitter, Google, Discord, etc. You can get a customizable login page, SDKs for your favorite frameworks and languages. So you can easily drop in something that works directly with your Next.js site and just have it just work, hashtag just work, Node Express, even lots more than that as well. You get next level features like user management, including roles and permissions and multi-factor authentication. I wrote my own user authentication with roles and multi-factor authentication. And let me tell you firsthand, it stinks. It's hard. I mean, mine doesn't stink, but it's hard to do. And then you have to maintain it. So it's much better to let the pros handle this kind of stuff, because it lets you do it effortlessly. Who wants to write your own multi-factor authentication when you can just turn it on? That'd be great to just be able to turn that thing on, right? You also get access to really fancy things like device biometrics. You can enable fingerprint login and make your user super psyched about having access to those advanced features without having to do a ton of work to get that going. So if you want to head on over, you can use the link in the show notes, or you can use this awesome short link, which is a0.to/syntax. That's a great URL, by the way, Auth0. What a great URL. You can sign up today and give it a try. Auth0, the easiest way for developers to add authentications and secure their applications. Thank you so much to Auth0 for sponsoring.
Next one we have here says, I was the main developer in charge of running Drupal sites for a media nonprofit and two blog and news sites that were very large sites with millions of views every single month. As with most Drupal sites, they all use MySQL databases. I was always working locally when developing, and so frequently I need to copy the production DB to my local MySQL instance, even though Drush is a tool that can be used with Drupal to do common things like that. Even though Drush had a tool that to do that, my preferred method was connect to the database using SQL Pro, which is a MySQL GUI. Two, dump the DB to a .sql file on my hard drive. Three, close the connection to the prod DB. Four, delete all the tables in my local DB. This is getting me sweaty already. And five, import the SQL file into the local DB. One time I needed to update my local DB copy on the main organization site, so I went through my user process with one exception. I didn't close the prod connection and end up deleting the entire DB for the live site. Ooh! When I called the president to tell him why the main site was down and what had happened, he was not happy, because 5 minutes before he was sending a fundraising email directing recipients to the site I had just taken out. Fortunately, I had the SQL file from prod that I had just copied down on my local machine, so I was able to import and get the site back up and running again. So, whew, thank goodness he downloaded it first before he deleted it, which would have been bad. Rough. So great job there.
Speaking of rough, I give this one 7 hellhounds out of 10. I have a spooky story from a couple of weeks ago. It seems like I got all the spooky stories. Wes doesn't do anything wrong, I suppose, so he doesn't have any spooky stories.
I probably have a couple I could think about. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a spooky story from a couple weeks ago. We'll call this Nervous Twitch. I was Twitch streaming and, I'm showing off some stuff, and I think it was SvelteKit things, the new features in SvelteKit with form actions. This video is very live in case you want to go check out this video. Well, I was streaming and I was scrolling through my app. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And then all of a sudden I close a file, and for a split second, I see what's on my screen. And what's on my screen is nothing other than my .env file being live streamed out to the internet. it's very funny because someone in the comments goes, you can tell by the look on Scott's face that he just realized what happened. Because I had not seen it. And then I just like cold sweat, like, oh no. The saving grace here, though, if we want to have a saving grace, because you would think that that would be a big, big problem for me, considering this is my level up tutorials code base. You know, this ended up not being a security leak, thank goodness, because I was very concerned about that. Reason being it wasn't a security leak is because, one, this is all my sandbox database things. This is all my sandbox stuff, which is fine. We don't really keep any secure anything in our sandbox URL. Two, yeah. Our sandbox database is scoped to my IP address or any of our developers' IP addresses. So even if you would have the connection string for my MongoDB, which is the only sensitive thing in there.
Yeah, that's a good call.
It would scope to that. So you can connect. Regardless, though, I did check the logs just to confirm that there was no other weird APIs trying to access it. And luckily there wasn't. And two, here's the best part about all of this. About every single string value in the .env was cropped just so slightly that you were missing maybe like 6 or 7 characters off the end of it. So while my API keys were all on the screen for a brief moment, none of them were fully, completely visible. And luckily, there was no risk of any sort of data. So I set myself up for success with all of this. But at the same time, it was definitely, as the one user mentioned, a soul leaving my body moment. And it was very funny to read the comment of the person saying, you can like pinpoint the exact moment that Scott realized what he did. Because you could just see it on my face. It was very obvious.
So I tweeted about this exact problem years ago. And it got the attention of John Papa, who does a lot of VS Code stuff. And he made there's a VS Code extension called Cloak, which will literally make your secrets see-through unless you click on them. And I even went into my own VS Code theme and said, when you are in a .env file,
have it be the background color or something?
Yes, make strings and numbers be the background color. And then he went a step further and like made an actual useful VS Code extension called Cloak that does exactly that. Because, yeah, that's super common where I accidentally opened a .env file on cam. And now you're pooched.
I'm going to link to that extension in the show notes because that's a pro tip right there. I don't know how I've never heard of this. And that's the kind of mistake you only make once, because I had my butt saved by my own best practices. But at the end of the day, I could have just as easily flashed some ENV variables that I didn't intend to. So
yeah,
things to consider when broadcasting to the internet.
I once paid somebody to work on some code for me, and this was back in the WordPress days. I just gave him FTP access, and he went in and just edited the file. But I still had the file open as well, so he did all like 2 hours worth of work, and I just saved my local file for some reason, and it overwrote all the work he had done, and I freaked out. So thankfully, he still had it open, and sent it over. And that's why you don't edit live on the server, folks.
I love that. That thankfully, like, the solution there was that he still had it open, which is like,
it would just would have been gone.
Would have been. I think that's anybody who worked back in that era who's, I mean, if you're still working like that, like, that's a concern. That's concerning. But anybody who's worked like that has probably had that situation to some degree happen. And I've had it with really minor, not like 2 hours worth of updates, but minor, like CSS overrides where you're like, why isn't this working? Oh, so-and-so had it open on their other computer. I remember utilizing it, Sublime SFTP. And like, what you would do is you'd connect Sublime so that the files that you're editing when you save it are directly uploading. And like, that's just how I used to code.
That was Coda. Coda was like the best. You just basically hit the sync button, or you could just like log into it and just go live, you know? And that was a wild time that we did that. And that was so common. And then when we moved to Sublime, a lot of people didn't move from Coda because they're like, this is how I work. I just FTP into the server and start working on stuff. And Control Z is your only version control. If you close it, close the buffer, you're screwed.
Yeah, I had that feature. Like, I never really used Coda. I used TextMate, and TextMate had SFTP, and then Sublime had SFTP. But before that, I had a hard time moving off of Dreamweaver because that was like really baked into Dreamweaver, and I really like, I didn't use any of the GUI tools, but I really liked having that FTP sync. I remember thinking like using Git was such a nightmare because it's adding all these extra steps to this thing that was so easy. I usually edit the file, I save it, I refresh, and it's there. And nowadays, and maybe it's just personal growth, but I'm shocked that was ever a thing that I felt like was a good practice, or like, why would I want to have all these extra steps to deploy code? I just want to save it and have it work.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Those are our spooky stories for today. Thank you everybody for sending them on in. If you have a spooky story of your own at any time, shoot them over. I asked for people if anyone wanted to record it themselves, but nobody sent an audio version over. But just email Wes at WesBoss.com, Twitter DM, literally send them to Scott any way you want. Send them over. We'll put them online for next year. And we'll do this every single year.
Yeah. But before we hit to our sick picks, let's go ahead and talk about one of our last sponsors, which this one is really good. Like, can you imagine you have something in your house that's moving all the time, and you're thinking, I got a dang ghost. I got a ghost in the house. So then you set up a little Wyze cam up or something like that, and then you look in that Wyze cam and say, oh, it's not a ghost. It's just my dog doing it. Well, that's the type of service that you get with LogRocket. And it's not a physical service like that, but it's something that you get with a video session replay for your website. Do you have ghosts in your websites? Do you have gremlins or creepy crawlies? Well, you can find out exactly what's going on with LogRocket because you get a session replay that not only shows you the event happening as it happened, but you get access to all of the things and tools that you need to solve that error, whether that be the network request, the error log, so much more. You can also see how people are using your website. You know that like TikTok video where it's that like woman watching somebody put blocks into a, like you put the triangle block into the triangle hole and the person's just putting all of them into the square or the circle hole because they all fit. And she's like, no, don't do that. Go put it in the triangle. That you can make sure that your users aren't putting the triangle block into the square hole just because it fixes. And you can then adjust how your site works to make sure by using something like LogRocket's video session replay. Stop guessing why things happen and start knowing why they happen and fix them. Thank you so much to LogRocket. Head on over to logrocket.com/syntax. Sign up today and you'll get 14 days for free. All right. Sick picks. Wes, do you have a sick pick?
Sure do. Let me take a look at my little list here. All right. This is going to be another tool pick. Coming off that building my office, I've got all kinds of tools that have been super helpful. And this one is called
a tool pick.
This one is a stepped drill bit. And if you just want to Google what this looks like, basically it kind of looks like a Christmas tree. And it allows you to drill progressively larger holes, which is really handy when you need to drill a size of hole of you don't necessarily know where it is, or you don't have a drill bit that is that large. Specifically where I got to use this recently is I replaced all the cords on my kids' headphones with removable cords because my kids, they break the headphone cords all the time. And then the headphones don't work, right? So I replaced them all with female headphone jacks. And then we just have like removable cords. And I needed to drill like the perfect size hole so I could put the female jack through the actual headphone. And a step bit is perfect for that because you just go right in and doot. And I find these things super, super handy. You can find them at Home Depot. You find them on Amazon. Again, I bought mine on, this is one of those tools where very cheap ones work very, very well, especially because you don't need it every single day. And I got mine on AliExpress or eBay, something like that, maybe six years ago. And it was like $5 for a set of three. Very, very good tool to have. I recommend you grab a set for yourself. I'll link up the AliExpress ones because those are the ones I have and they are very good.
Sick. I am going to sick pick something that I got for, I have the AirPod Pros. And this isn't going to work with the normal AirPods, but with the Pros and many other AirPod devices, or not AirPod, like earbud, wireless earbud, or even non-wireless phone. Anytime you got headphones that have like removable tips on them, this is a good sick pick. And I use this brand, it's Comply. So Comply foam ear tips. And these things just pop right onto the end of the AirPod Pros, or like I said, any earbuds essentially that have ends on them. And what they are is essentially they're foam tips. And it's kind of like you ever have one of those like foam rocket ship style ear protection earplugs, right? You put in your ears and it blocks all the sound maybe to go to a concert or something like that. Well, these things connect to your headphones and you squeeze them and then you put them, your AirPod in your ear and then they expand into your ear. And what it turns out, it like blocks all extra sound coming into your headphones. And besides just blocking out sound coming in, which is especially useful for like headphones with noise canceling features, especially earbuds with noise canceling features, it's extremely useful for fit, right? Like one of the biggest complaints people have is that the AirPods don't fit in their ear well. When you have the foam tip, you squeeze it and you push it in and it expands. It fits really nicely into your ear and it like really locks them in. So it sounds like I'm doing an ad read for these things, but I truly love these tips. I've had them for every single pair of headphones I ever had. And when I had the old AirPods, I was like really bummed out that I couldn't have these. So check out Comply foam ear tips. They're a wonderful upgrade to any headphone that you might have. So check them out.
Sweet. I am going to shamelessly plug all my courses. Go to westboss.com/courses for a list of all the web development courses that I offer. If you do buy one, use coupon code SYNTAX for $10 off.
Sick. I'm going to shamelessly plug leveluptutorials.com. We have a new course on WordPress 102 and a new course coming from me on the complete SvelteKit course. This is like going to be the single greatest SvelteKit course in the whole world. It's going to take care of all of the latest and greatest new things. It's going to have form actions, progressive enhancement, and anything that you could possibly want to know about building sites in SvelteKit, all prepped for the release of SvelteKit 1. It's not out yet, but it's going to be out very soon by the time you're listening to this, if not already out. So leveluptutorials.com. Sign up today and save 25% off your subscription. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Have a spooky day.
Spooky day.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.